Welcome to Modcast, a Civilization podcast focused on game modding. Rob R8XFT.
T Pangolin.
Jan Boruta.
Alpha Shard.
We were just talking about introducing ourselves to say who we are and what it is we do, so people have a bit of background, so we're not just, I'm some guy who talks fast and he's some guy with some English accent and you're some Polish guy that isn't Marbazier.
Hi, this is Modcast, Rob R8XFT, and also
Jan Boruta.
Jet, also known as T Pangolin on the web zones.
Scott or Alpha Shard.
Sometimes, I think as a creator, you have to put your own pride to one side, because I've created Civs, and I've had to say, to be honest, some of the other guys have done better versions. Say, well, the best, for the sake of the mod, the best thing is to use the best quality out there.
Yeah, if you look at the vanilla Civs, sometimes they're just not as exciting as the Brave New World Civ. My 9 favourite Civs ultimately come from the Brave New World Civs because they're so pretty to look at and some of the traits are just really creative. And when you look at some of the vanilla Civs, they're just really boring, like Rome gets production boosts from buildings that are rebuilt in the capital.
Yeah.
America's is just really boring. And then you have lots and lots of Civs that just lack the flavour of the Brave New World Civs.
Yeah.
And it really rounds out the game in terms of flavor. And then it's really good what they've been doing, though, that Firaxis has been slowly incrementally updating old Civs. Like Germany, we got a really nice upgrade.
Yeah,
and as did Japan, that got a nice upgrade, and so did Arabia.
I've actually upgraded Rome for Anno Domini in that it's got the Hacienda, but not as a Hacienda. It's got the same building, but as a forum. And that works,
yes.
That works pretty well for them.
The modikit allows you to pretty much use anything you want, but say if you're planning a giant mod and you want to use like an integral component, but that person won't let you, but even though the modikit will, do you still go ahead and use it, even though you don't have their permission, even though you're legally allowed to?
Technically, you should have their permission. I think probably some people like to have it in their mod first.
Mm.
It's like if I was creating some stuff for Anno Domini, part of the draw, certainly in Civ 3, probably more so than Civ 5, was the new leaderheads. I mean, in Civ 5, they're ripe at the minute, but in Civ 3, getting a new leaderhead is like, wow. So it was just a case sometimes with me of, yeah, you can use it, but can you just let me release Anno Domini first so that my mod first? And that's kind of okay.
20 years later.
Yeah, well, absolutely, yeah. It doesn't really matter.
You'll be still working on Civ 5 Anno Domini by Civ 7.
On holiday for about 3 weeks, back end of July, start of August, so I should expect to get something out by then. Fingers crossed. So just doing a little bit of background then. Jet, what sort of things do you get involved with the Civ 5 community?
Right, so in terms of the Civ 5 modding community, I came around just before the release of Gods and Kings, so I got to experience a week or so of glorious vanilla. Up until when Brave New World was about to be released, that's when I started to get into researching modding. But up until now, I have no modding capabilities whatsoever, and I rely on other people to realize my dreams. And as such, I'm the creative director and the producer behind a mod pack or a mod series called Colonialist Legacies that focuses on adding colonial civilizations. It's a pretty vague term, colonialist legacies. Either things like Australia, Canada, that was established by colonial empires, entities that were heavily affected by colonial empires like Vietnam. And happy modcast.
What about you then, Jan?
I didn't join the modding community outright. I also got involved with it around the release of Gods and Kings a bit after that, after Steam Workshop was launched. I could see all the new mods coming out pretty easily, much more easier than the previous mod handling device in Civ 5 Vanilla. And I just realized that I could draw some stuff. I was out of my job just before Gods and Kings were finished, so I figured I could do some stuff for myself. New graphics that would be a bit more pleasing to the eye than just copy-pasted images of buildings or soldiers. At first, I was doing stuff for myself, but then I contacted JFD, because I think the first Civ I did art for was Venice. And we kind of came along and we're collaborating and making new Civs for 2 years now. Then I was contacted by the More Civs team and by Tomatech. And I am doing stuff pretty much for everyone. But besides, I'm also a digital artist and traditional artist by myself outside of Civ.
Insert plug your DeviantArt here.
Absolutely fantastic art.
I think that I'm lacking only 3D modeling.
When that happens, proper. Watch out.
It will be necessary for my design studies as well, so I might as well pick it up this summer.
Uh-huh. Well, hurry it up then.
Too much work.
Right, so Scott, Alpha Shard, what's your involvement in modding? How do you start?
So how did you get into modding then?
I think in Civ 2, I learned how to modify the Civ Ini file and then the custom units file. There was a big graphic where you could see all the different units, and I liked modifying it using some of the units over there. There was a little unit I remember that looked like a kind of like a samurai with a spear weapon, and I actually put it in the game because I just wanted to use the graphic. And I think I made it a little overpowered, but it was just fun to put stuff in that and modify the game and make it like a new experience just from a small modification.
Yeah, I started on Civ 2 as well with exactly the same ini file and the same graphics. I think I added some of the other graphics as well. I think you could also change the buildings.
Mm-hmm.
I can remember doing that, but I never actually put anything up for Civ Fanatics. I was just a lurker back then.
Mm-hmm.
So did you then move on to Civ 3?
Yeah, I played Civ 3 a little bit, and I guess I wasn't quite as into it. I think I got confused between that game and Cult Power.
All right.
And so I didn't play that one as much. I focused back on Civ 2 until Civ 4 came out, and that's when I played the next game in the series. I haven't gotten too much into the other stuff, like, you know, making Civ, but I've also just enjoyed playing other mods to expand my experience on Civ.
Cool. I was quite involved with Civ 3, where I started sort of publishing mods and graphics. I started off with American Mod, which I joined a guy called Unexisted, who's no longer around on forums. Both myself and Sword of Geddon, that was our first experience in modding, and obviously we've then gone on to do other projects of our own. That then, because Unexisted had introduced me to Poser 5, which was like the program that I used for the leaderheads, became a bit of a leaderhead creator, and I was probably better known for that at that time. Then came up with the idea of doing Anno Domini for Civ 3, which was based in ancient times, basically. Total conversion mod. I started doing a few units as well. And one thing that I picked up from another guy that was on there at the time, Embryo Dead, I really admired how he worked because he could do everything, whereas a lot of the modders, including myself, were either leaderhead creators or unit creators, or maybe did the odd building, but he did everything. And so I was trying to do that. I didn't really get too much into Civ 4, mainly because I preferred Civ 3 at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I was still working on Anno Domini, and a mod's never finished for a modder. You know, you always go back and want to tweak this, tweak that. I released a couple of leaderheads,
mm-hmm.
but that was about it. Then it came to Civ 5. I did another version of Anno Domini for Civ 5, and I'm working on currently a new Word version of that. Let's talk about More Civilizations, which is one of the compilations of civilizations that we've been blessed with on Civ 5. And there are so many different groups, so we've just decided to choose this one this time, but we'll probably look at some of the others in a future modcast.
Mm-hmm.
More Civilizations seems to be an excellent collection of Civs. It's got a list of contributors, which include Puakai, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, who does a lot of the PR for the More Civs, as well as the coding and some art and some other stuff. Jan Baruta seems to do quite a bit of artwork for that. Luigi contributes, quite a few others as well. So looking at the different Civs, for example, with the Chola, got your domestic trade routes, yield plus one gold. There's trade routes with city-states, generating great admiral points and influence with the city-state, and also bonuses double for naval trade routes. And then two unique units are a great admiral replacement and a caravel replacement. So it's all tied into a naval civ. So I really like that, rather than some of the civs that come out from some contributors that seem to think, right, we're doing this particular civilization, what's the most famous building we can think of that's connected to them? what's the most famous unit that we could think of, and let's just put an ability that seems to fit. But the three elements don't necessarily go together. However, with more civs, they do.
I understand what you mean. Like, for example, it's the Canada civ that somebody made. By example, what you're talking about is, I remember that civ, it didn't show the Mounties as a unit. It was there was something else. It seemed really interesting because it looked like it was a diplomatic kind of civ, and it seemed more aimed, less obvious stuff than make a theme about that civ and make it work with different unique building or unique unit and ability and make it interesting and not just, you know, oh, let's give the Canadians Mounties and maple syrup resource or something.
It's really interesting, the unique ability as well. From making peace, receive culture per turn from followers of your religion, and the amount of culture increases with the amount of cities captured in the previous war. Bonus is lost and reset on capturing the city or declaring war. I would never have thought of that, and I wouldn't even imagine how I could go about creating that if they hadn't. So it's fantastic to get civs like that that I could then slot into my own mod. I've got quite a lot of civilizations with that, so it was important to me to have something or some civilizations that were quite unique, and more civs did that for me. Again, the artwork is absolutely second to none with these civilizations. There's some absolutely brilliant leaderheads amongst these, as well as the units and the high-functional buildings as well. I mustn't forget the maps either. All the maps are fantastic too.
Oh yeah, definitely. There is some really great artwork on here. Metsuko has plan of Ugala. Artifacts in the Empire provide +2 culture for the capital. Borders expand 20% faster. Unique unit is Royalis. Replaces Rifleman. Provides 2 local happiness when garrisoned in the city. Receives 10% combat strength when fighting in friendly territory. Unique unit is Zapatista. Replaces Gatling gun. Stronger but does not have a ranged attack. Instead, the Zapatista ignores terrain costs and receives a combat bonus when fighting in rough terrain. Receives a 20% combat boost when fighting on a pillaged tile. Huh.
The other one that I have actually played a bit is the Phoenician one, with the Phoenician alphabet, with the extra gold for science. The Byron and Tyrian merchant is unique units. So you can really get a good seafaring merchant civ there. And that works well with my sort of style of gameplay, how I like to actually play the game. Again, the art is fantastic with that too. And it's that version that I've integrated into my own mod, because it was better than the one that I created myself.
The Phoenician one seems a little bit like Venice in a way, or at least the focus on mercantilism.
Yes, that focus is similar to Venice, although of course you can have as many cities as you wish. Rather than just the one city that Venice limits you to, excuse me.
Yeah, that's true.
All of these civs, by the way, have a unique music that's been put in, and believe that they have the correct starting point. There's some sort of mod that came out with some extra city-states.
Mm-hmm.
They're placed in the right place on a world map, and I think that these civs have got that compatibility as well. That's quite nice.
I know that Scott was playing Buccaneer civ before.
Yes, I wanted to give my review of it.
The Buccaneer discussion.
It was a nice civ, but there were some graphics issues with some of the graphics cards.
Yeah.
There's one civilization called the Buccaneers. The Buccaneers were initially released as an April Fool's joke civ, but it's actually become really, really popular just because it's a really, really well-rounded civ. The traits include, the UA is called a Letter of Mark, and naval units can enter enemy territory without open borders, but may turn hostile if they end their turn in a tile owned by an enemy. So it's really good to send in your triremes and let them go all barbarian on your enemy, so that it kind of ruins all their trade routes. And they also receive extra gold from each trade route that is pillaged, city captured, or unit killed. So they're like sacrificial captives for the Aztecs, but you get monies, sweet, sweet monies. The unit is the Corsair, which is a privateer replacement. Receives a temporary combat boost after raiding a trade route and has additional bonus against naval units. And the unique improvement, which is fantastic, is the rum distillery, and it's awesome for flavor. It requires machinery. It can only be built on jungle and marsh or on a sugar resource. And if it's built on a sugar resource, you get a unique resource called rum. And if you don't go for that RAM alternative, frankly, I don't know what's wrong with you. But it also provides plus one food and plus one gold. And after 40 turns of being worked, it turns into a vintage distillery, which provides additional yield. And it's a really good way to counter it if you're Brazil.
Yeah.
Yes, I've won a game through it. Like, I think my capital was landlocked, but all my other cities I was able to get coastal.
The land pirates.
Yeah, it was a little confusing between the city-states. Make sure I didn't confuse my civ with their cities. And when I settled Rum Distillery, it did give me a graphic glitch on the terrain. It would flash to black, and it was very distracting. So I would have to go to strategic mode just to avoid that issue. I liked the unique ability to getting the extra gold. I filled my coffers quite nicely. And there's a trade-off of not having the sugar resource, so that means less happiness, but the rum does give you good money.
The graphics glitch isn't on NVIDIA cards, by the way, and that it's AMD cards. So I know the team are actually trying to work out how to fix that at the moment.
Yeah,
Luigi is under a bit of pressure because he has uses of his own now, and well, after that, I think.
So for people who aren't in the know, Luigi essentially took a break, and he was the person who created some really, really cool, unique improvements, such as the Hacienda for the Mexico Civ. And he's gone around creating lots and lots of Civs, and he provides leaderheads to a lot of people, like more Civs and Colonius Legacies, and he's essentially a tour de force when it comes to modding. And when he went on that hiatus, everybody really felt it.
It's a well-defined civilization by the modder Tomatek. The Sioux introduce Sitting Bull as the leader. The Sioux's unique ability is called the Great Buffalo Hunt. Starting with your second city, settling near Plain Styles will spawn a buffalo bonus resource, which will periodically roam throughout the map. Buffalo provide a large base tile yield and may claim neutral territory. Basically, it is a civ that revolves around a bonus resource unique to that civ, and no other civ except for Colonius Blackfoot cannot gain. The buffalo resource only appears after you found your second city, so you have to expand, and expand wisely into plains only. So it kind of emulates the Great Plains from modern United States. The buffalo roam around every several turns. They can wander to neutral territory, but they can't go to rival territory. So nobody can get hold of them unless Sioux City is captured. It also claims neutral territory, so it is perhaps able to claim resources faster than cultural expansion of your cities. The uniques of the Sioux. The unique unit is the Strong Hard Warrior. It replaces a knight, receives defensive bonuses, and has a bonus versus gunpowder units. And I think the most, or one of the more fun elements of the Sioux, is the unique improvement from the Conquest of the New World Deluxe scenario, the teepee. It is available at trapping, provides plus one food and plus one culture, and gets additional food after researching horseback riding, so pretty early on. There is a condition. If built near a city near which a buffalo is present, you have the option to move one population from your largest city to the tipi city. On city capture, all non-pillaged tipi in the city radius are removed. So it is also a unique improvement, very unique to the Sioux. It cannot be conquered or gained by other civilizations. So it's pretty important to defend all that. But I think the most important factor here is the citizen relocation. Because when you build a teepee near a city that works a buffalo resource, an event, a pop-up, will appear called the Great Buffalo Hunt, asking you to move population. So you can spring up your newly founded cities pretty fast, especially when your capital is already big early in the game, and the additional food from the teepees there should really help with that. It's a fun civ.
It's really, really fun. The buffalo mechanic is fantastic. So the buffalo spawns, starts moving, and it starts moving, and it starts moving. It's really cool. It kind of emulates the whole Great Buffalo Hunt on the Great Plains of America. It's thematically, it's really, really nice. It's also got a really nice peace theme and a really, really cool war theme. And the leader screen was done by Jan. He looks a bit frumpy, but that's, you know, Sitting Bull always kind of look frumpy in all of his photographs. But no, it's a really, really well-rounded seal. It's worth noting the compatibility with the Blackfoot, which is quite fun, because the Blackfoot has a buffalo as well, but it's completely different from the Sioux. Essentially, the Blackfoot buffalo is a luxury, whereas the Sioux buffalo is more of a bonus resource like the cattle, but it can move on top of resources that can amplify yields, and it just wanders all over the place. So if the Blackfoot captures a Sioux buffalo, that buffalo will turn into a luxury and you can trade it. And if the Sioux captures a Blackfoot buffalo, it will turn into the roaming buffalo. So it's kind of cool in that respect. And it's really interesting to play that with them against Canada and a bunch of other American-style civs. It's really, really fun.
Yeah, I've been playing it and really enjoyed it. Funnily enough, the Blackfoot just came up by random as a neighbour, so didn't quite see the mechanic work like you suggested, where they were competing for resources, but really was so nice, the Civ itself. Like you said, the peace theme is excellent, and quite like the fact that the buffalo was roaming around and claiming that extra territory. Really was useful, especially with Pocatello being the other side as well, because obviously as soon as he creates a city, you know, takes the whole landmass, it kind of helped to counteract some of that. So, yeah, it was good.
It makes you kind of wish that something like roaming animals and migratory animals were something that was also included in the base game. And that would be a really cool standalone mod to have little giraffes or some other resources just roaming throughout the map like the buffalo. And it makes you wish like, oh, why didn't I think of that?
I've just got a question for you, Jan. If you were recreating the Polish, what would you change from the Firaxis version?
Well, I had an idea for a Polish, let's say, split into two factions.
Uh-huh.
It's been planned out, but it's still like in the alpha stages of planning. I wanted to make a Kingdom of Poland with Kazimierz and a new unique building and a new unique unit that focuses on the historical theme of Kazimierz's rule, that was all about getting up after defeats in war and building up your economy. So there was an idea for getting bonus production in your cities for every declaration of friendship or something. And there was the second Polish faction, so the Commonwealth of Poland-Lithuania, that takes the Winged Hussar and the Ducal Stable, but gets a new leader and almost practically stays the same, except for the unique ability, which for now it's strong, free social policy every era, but it's kind of bland and really doesn't translate any kind of Polish history into the game.
It's so versatile that it could literally mean anything.
Yeah.
It's worth noting that last sort of play testing at the moment of Poland split, which has, like you said, the Kingdom of Poland under Kazimierz and the Polish Empire / Commonwealth under Stephen Bathory.
Yeah.
It's worth having a look at it. Pretty much the exact opposite of what you said here, as the Ducal Stables with Kazimierz still, and the social policy with Stephen Bathory and the Commonwealth.
Well, the Ducal Stable, medieval building, it has its foundation history, but later on there was a system of land management called Folwark. Pretty much would translate into a ducal stable, in my opinion. So just this. I have to check out Lastwort's idea.
I like Lastwort's traits that sometimes are just, you know, they're unrivaled. But then there's also the overwhelming factor of Lastwort's sims, because he always bundles them into three. So you're just like, I want to play with some of these, but I don't like the others. And
yeah, that was my problem. It's kind of strange, but I understand that he has made so many sims that it's easier to bundle them up in smaller chunks.
I was reading the unique ability for the Kingdom of Poland modded civ. That noble host ability seems a little overpowered. Once per era, gain one land unit for each city upon war declaration. That's like instant army. Like, what if you had 10 or 20 cities? You know, that's 10 free units, basically, just because you declared war.
Yeah, but that's our last sort of civs are very flavorful like that. Some of them are just crazy, crazy powerful.
Yeah.
But some of them in the same pack are pretty balanced.
I can imagine myself just quite happily going along with my save, and all of a sudden my treasury just takes a dive. They've suddenly got all these units to support. But I can imagine it being useful when you've got a neighbour that suddenly jumps upon you with about 10 units that you weren't expecting.
I could just see some people really abusing the noble host ability. On Polycast, me and team loves to cheese games, meaning to do overpowered stuff just to see if he can do it. And that looks like something he would love to abuse. The noble host.
Yeah, well, that ability is very well justified historically, so it is nice, but in terms of strength, I cut the number of free units in half.
Game mechanic versus reality.
Well, this game mechanic is pretty okay regarding reality, just a bit too strong. So, like I said, half of these units, so every two cities produce one free land unit, and it should be okay.
A lot of things in reality that get abused in gameplay.
Yeah, I think it's a bit of oversimplification of reality and translating it into gameplay. A couple of weeks ago, Sukritak posted a thread called Sukritak's Decisions that introduces, but doesn't release yet, a new component for Civ gameplay. A sort of panel of selectable events for your Civ that requires the player to invest in enacting a decision and in return grants a specific flavorful reward for such Civ. It uses the Pantheon selection screen, and it introduces a new bonus or strategic resource called Magistrates that are necessary for enacting any decision. So it kind of brings an element of Europa Universalis to Civ, a fair bit of flavor that lets you manage your empire better. For example, there are currently three sets of decisions that the player can choose from. There are generic decisions for every Civ, like inviting a great person to court for a set amount of gold, request help of a great artist or something like that, initiate tax reforms. Then there are religious decisions that are tied to specific religions. Not all are supported. I think Buddhism, Hinduism, Christianity, Islam, and Judaism are currently supported. They introduce a few unique events, like Islam will require the player to provide a bit of gold and return a very large amount of faith. It's called a obtain a Quranic manuscript. There are also religious festivals to hold that reward food and faith, and so on. And there is a third group of decisions that will be probably one of the most important, and those are Civ-specific decisions. Each civilization gets, so far, two unique decisions, like the Siamese get a decision called create a Thai alphabet that requires the player to have wats, or the universities in all cities, can only be enacted once per game, costs a fair amount of culture, one magistrate, but rewards the player with one free technology. So, in general, it's about opportunity cost and how the player manages his resources.
It's really fun. I really like the America trait, because America, as we were talking about before, is really kind of bland. And yet there's a trait for, I can't remember what it was called, but essentially what it does allows you to get the Shoshone UA.
Yeah.
When you settle a new city, it allows you to expand your borders like the Shoshone do. That city, the first city you found that does that, is going to be called Baton Rouge. And it really gives you a sense of immersion that the base game doesn't have. That they kind of added it with Brave New World, but they kind of didn't go far enough.
This decision is called the Louisiana Purchase.
Right, yes.
Player must be America, must have completed at least one social policy tree, can be enacted only once per game. It costs a lot of gold, two magistrates, but founded cities start with additional territory, like you said, like Shoshone. Those are those small pieces of flavor that tie to the civilization's history.
Each civilization gets two of these decisions, so that's 86 decisions, you know, right there from the base game, going off the 43. But then you have things like random events, the religious decisions, the generic decisions, and with modded capability, that's also going to be a huge thing with adding in modded civs, because I think JFD has already started to include compatibility with their own decisions.
Comatech also has a few civs with decisions. The Sioux, for example, already have decisions, but we're still missing quite a lot of civ-specific decisions. I think 40% of civilizations still need those, especially those tribal ones like the Zulu.
Yeah. There's also they were talking about the random events. Some things like Halley's Comet, you get bonuses, and that was something from Civ 4 that a lot of people really, really liked. So that's going to be a really welcome improvement to come back.
Yeah, so far there's only, one random event that is Comet Sighted, and it's an Easter egg from Europa Universalis, because you lose Golden Age points, whatever you choose, and in EU you lose one stability, always. So it's a running joke, kind of. But
it's really good because it's so versatile, because modders are going to mod on that mod, and then when modders mod mods, you may get really good modders mod mods. So that 10 times really fast.
Shall we discuss the future of modding then?
Yes.
Makes you think. Every new Civ mod that you see is like something completely different. And when it's competitive like that, it just fuels creativity. So everybody's working really hard to make something that's new and something that's completely different.
Yeah, it's like with my mod at the moment that's in development, Anno Domini. I got the main game sorted out maybe 2 or 3 months ago, but things have moved on that quickly with like Socratic's decisions coming in and with these other cool Civs. So thematically, they're brilliant that they've got to be included. And I've got to sort of make my mod back up to standard again. That's just after 2 or 3 months. You know, it's just going on so competitive at the moment, but in a good way. You know, it's spurring everyone on.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I like about the modding community right now. This also helps with the creative process. For example, I wasn't doing leaderheads in the first place. I only did icons and maps. But then when Luigi came along, and more when he posted a tutorial on how he does that, it was just easier for me to start photo manipulating, using elements of existing Civ leaders, and so on. It was, in fact, an effect of competition between me and Luigi, and sometimes Sukritak, who is also a great artist and provides a lot of icons and maps for his own civs.
Do you find it easier to mod in Civ 5, or same, or harder?
I think you can do more, but I'm more reliant on other people, I find. With Civ 3, it had an editor, so I could edit no problem. Sometimes, you know, because it was a very friendly forum in Civ 3, there's quite a few of us would, you know, have a chat about how we could make the most out of the editor. But it was basically making the most out of reasonably limited tools. I think I kind of outgrew the tools that you could use, so I wanted to do a little bit more. And there's a limit to what you could do. For example, there's a limit to the number of buildings you can have in, the number of civs. You can't introduce new sort of attributes for the civilizations in the same way that you can for Civ 5. Sort of gravitated towards that. And I found it to be an absolutely fantastic game to play. When I actually started out with Civ 5, I had to think whether or not to do a version for Civ 4. And I thought, well, it's now. Civ 5's really in vogue. So I might as well go ahead and jump straight to there.
Yeah, I remember Civ 2 had a world builder, and I think Civ 4 as well. They did seem more mod-friendly.
Yeah.
Now, I would say that the Civ modding is essentially in its renaissance, because so many people are working together, and there's never been so many people just working so hard to release new things.
I'm amazed with what people have done with Civ 5, I have to say. You know, with some of the civilizations that are coming out, with some very imaginative, unique attributes. I think people have done marvels with the different modifications that they've actually made to it.
There's a lot of civs that people have made, and it's really nice that even the leaderhead quality is really good.
Absolutely. Got some very, very good artists around the community. Absolutely first rate.
I know for myself, personally, I've got at least about 26 things in production, but everybody's working so frantically on everything that just, it really makes you think of what's going to happen in the future.
I like the way and how a lot of these civilizations that are created tie in unique unit and unique buildings to the actual unique ability.
It makes it very, and here's a word that Dan hates, synergistic.
Synergistic, right, okay. I use the word synergy a lot, but I've not heard synergistic.
You have to go at how long is the Civ 5 modding community going to last, especially with the advent of Civ 6 and more recently Beyond Earth.
Yeah, that was my concern as of late, just because I enjoy doing Civ stuff, Civ art so much. And I was kind of afraid that one day I would have to stop that because most of the people would move to Civ 6. Some would be diverted to Beyond Earth coming October. Civ 5 modding might fizzle out, unlike Civ 4 and Civ 3 modding, which thrives to this day. I don't know why, it might be irrational, but it's just a concern that Civ 6 next year or in 2016 might be good enough for more people to move on, or it will be compatible with Civ 5 enough that more people will move along, leave Civ 5 behind and mod another game.
Yeah, but then you have to look at that. There's that precedent with Civ 3 and Civ 2, and there's the Civ 3 modding community still flourishing and the Civ 4 community still flourishing.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I didn't really get involved with the Civ 4 modding community, so I was with the Civ 3 modding community for basically 10 years, 8 to 10 years, before I moved on to Civ 5.
So, wow, that's tenacity right there.
Yeah. But there's guys that were there, you know, right at the outset, like me, who are still there doing Civ 3 stuff, because, you know, they're not too fussed about Civ 4 or Civ 5, they really like Civ 3, and they enjoy doing all the modding for it. So, you know, good on them. That's what floats their boat, then fair enough. But I think the same sort of thing will happen with Civ 5, that there'll be enough people keep modding it because they can't see that it go any further. And that when Civ 6 comes out, inevitably half the people will love it and half the people hate it and want to stick with Civ 5.
Especially at launch, yeah.
Yeah.
I think each Civ has been like that, where some people liked it and others hated it. They liked the previous version and they stick to that version that they like.
The other thing that happens as well is that the modding community, I think, doesn't get going properly until the final expansion has gone out. Like we've seen with Brave New World's gone out about a year ago now, isn't it? And it's really in the last 6 months to a year that the community's really taken off. So when Civ 6 comes out, I think it'll be 2 or 3 years before that modding community really takes off in the same way as Civ 5 has. So
yeah, maybe. It depends, because Civ 5 at launch was really, really bad. In terms of modding, it was a whole new world, a new fantastic point of view. Nobody really knew what was happening. It was just such a step up.
Yeah.
And you have to look with the not-too-distant future, especially with Beyond Earth. I don't think that's going to take about 2 or 3 years to kick off. But no, I think because it's built off the same engine, I'm not sure there's going to be a mass exodus as such. But Civ 6 is definitely the one to look out for to see if there's going to be that mass migration as such of people moving over.
Going back to Civ 2, Civ 3, Civ 4, the same thing happened in those communities. It wasn't until the final expansion came out that things really started to get going. There were some mods from Vanilla and from the first expansion in particular, but it wasn't until the second expansion came out for each of them that the community really said, right, well, that's everything been released. Let's see what we can do.
Civ 5 at the beginning was quite boring. Retrospectively, it was boring. When you have Gods and Kings, which added so much more, then you had Brave New World, which added like 75% more. It was quite boring, so I'm not sure how that ties into it. But when you look at the original, was it 8 Civs or something, and now we have 43, it's definitely a contrast. You have to wonder how many Civs Civ 6 is going to have at launch and what the modding capabilities are going to be like immediately. Because, like you're saying, it did take a good few years to get the Civ 5 off its feet, only because Firaxis pretty much amputated us and we had to figure out how to work with our genetics in order to regrow our own limbs, and we're finally just getting there.
Yeah,
it might be similar with Civ 6, that it will strip down to a very core of Civs. Now we have, well, dozens of Civs that are vanilla, official, or modded, and we all get used to it so well. And also the modding community now has all the tools, the methods of work with Civ 5. So at the same time, I'm optimistic and pessimistic about that, because
it's a sweet symphony.
Yeah, due to all the methods and habits of modding for C5 and all the stuff that has already been done, a lot of people will likely stay with C5 like they did with C4. But there is a possibility that C6 will be kind of backwards compatible in some regards to C5.
Oh, you hope so. Hopefully it doesn't just like have 1-7 and pay DLCs for the rest of them.
But what's happening now as well, there's so many good ideas that's coming out. When C6 comes out, the idea aspect will still be there. They'll still want a Sioux Civ that has Wandering Buffalo in some way. So that idea will have already been generated, you know? And when I look back at the modding that I've done for different versions of Civs, history never actually changes. So the city list for a Civ is still the same. The history of that Civ is still the same. So you still have part of that work already done.
Yeah, it's going to be fun, especially with Elm, because you can still port Civ 4 maps over to Civ 5, and that's as good as we're going to get in terms of compatibility.
Yeah,
exactly.
Between those two games.
I just hope that the one area of the community that I hope that starts getting more active is the unit graphics area. I know that people do some new unit graphics when they release a Civ, but it doesn't seem to be very active in terms of people just coming up.
Actually, really just getting over our feet. People like Civitar and Nomad or what come out of nowhere, literally.
Yeah.
Figuratively, because they literally just popped out of a fox out of the ground. They came out of nowhere and they started creating all these amazing fantasy units. Because previously you had Luigi and other people like that making small mods and small reskins, and Bernie 14 was really, really good in terms of porting stuff over, but then it kind of died down. But now you have all these weird fantasy things coming out of absolutely seemingly from nowhere. And if you check out the unit graphics forum at the moment, you can just see it flourishing. They just released tigers, there's zombies, there's sea serpents, there's krakens, and you have to wonder, like, where was this? Why has it taken so long for us to get to this point? And we're getting really good at converting Civ 4 units to Civ 5, like releasing an Afghani Civ soon, and we're going to have camel gunners. And we're just like, thank God somebody created camel gunners from Civ 4, because camels and guns are a good mix.
Yeah, the champ, I have the Ballista Elephant ported from C4 as well.
Right. I see all the fantasy units, and that's great. I'd like to see more real units be created in there as well. It'd be nice to see if somebody could actually pop up. Because originally, going back to Civ 3, you used to get people who either did units or did leaderheads or did just like one component. People are doing Civs now, so they're doing like the whole thing and releasing it as the whole thing. So maybe as many units are being made, it's just that it's in a different format. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, like you're saying, as you progress throughout, you're going to hope things are going to be backwards compatible. And I kind of overlooked how backwards compatible the units are. I mean, it took us a while in order to get the methods. Like, Deliverator did a lot of hard work to figure out how to convert Civ 4 units into Civ 5. And now that we have the tutorials, it's really coming out of the woodworks. So for all the potential modders that want units, it's really worth to take a look at the Civ 4 downloads area and see if a unit or an improvement that's already been done in Civ 4 and you can port that over, so you might not have to build it from scratch.
I've started doing one or two of those reskins from Civ 4 in the Anno Domini mod.
I've been reading some discussions on Reddit lately, and I say how disappointing the Civ 5 modding scene is compared to the Civ 4 modding scene. I've been kind of contemplating, is the population of people doing things much smaller in Civ 5, or we just lack the amount of talented people that the Civ 4 had? Because, you know, there were some really, really, really big overhauls in Civ 4 with, you know, Rise and Fall, Chaos Civs and stuff like that. That was just insane, but we have to wonder when Civ 5 will get to that point, or if we just lack the people or the manpower to do so.
I think the Steam Workshop has really helped enable people to notice the modding scene better. You're just going to your game page and you can see, like, popular mods down at the bottom, and you always notice them there, you know, so that they're a lot easier to notice, I think, on Steam Workshop. So that might be why Civ 5 is more noticeable on the modding and Civ 4 is not as much. You have to go look for the stuff for Civ 4 or any of the other previous Civs.
But then you have to wonder, why are there so many overhauls for Civ 4 and not many for Civ 5? If people can be inspired so much by Civ 5, why was there so much more modding happening in Civ 4? But, you know, there maybe there weren't as many people.
Yeah, well, modders for Civ 5 constantly moan about Firaxis hard coding a lot of stuff and engine inaccessibilities and drawbacks that don't allow such big overhauls to be made, such quantities than in Civ 4.
So yeah, that can definitely be a factor. Everybody hates DLL. And maybe one person is like, wow, this DLL was a good idea.
I think it depends on the people that frequent the forum as well. I went onto the Civ 4 forum a few times. Nobody really was up for Anno Domini. So I originally was going to do a version of Anno Domini for that. Nobody was interested at all. So I went back to Civ 3 and did another version for it there.
So you're going to go try again in Beyond Earth?
What, for Anno Domini?
Yeah.
Well, let's see the Civ 5 version come out first, and then we'll...
Yes.
but I kind of imagine that, you know, we're talking about Beyond Earth modding. I think that there'll be a couple of things happen. One is that people will want to create a big mod, which starts off at 4000 BC and integrates both elements of Civ 5 and Beyond Earth. So it takes it, you know, all the way.
I'm also noticing there's quite a big group of Civ 5 modders that can't wait to start modding Civ Beyond Earth. If you look at some of the ideas for new factions, because the current stock factions that we have, they're kind of cool. Like you have Polystralia and Brasilia being all militaristic, and some of the leaders are really, really cool and they have flavor, but then you're just reading these just insane suggestions, and some of them will kind of inspire you like to start modding. Like, for example, Krezen came up with this idea that during World War II, the Nazis, the reason they lost the war is because they funneled so much money into their space program. They're all already on the way to Alpha Centauri, and the Nazis are going to get to the new planet at the same time that we are, because they've been traveling much slower and we just get there much quicker. They try to get there to escape the impure Earthlings. I just really can't wait to start modding.
I think that some of the fantasy creators will like the Beyond Earth and maybe do a fantasy mod with all the wandering monsters and that.
You can go into anything. It's just so, like, because the sci-fi is very versatile. Like, you have the siege worms that are kind of based off the Dune worms, and then you could go into things like Star Trek and Star Wars, and you're going to see a lot of familiar faces in the future, and it's just how quick can somebody get a Firefly mod up, or how quickly can someone get a Galactic Empire mod up? And I'll start taking bets now.
I bet you Babylon 5 mod will be the last thing done.
Oh, no. There's going to be, like, Fifth Element mods and...
What I say?
Oh, there's going to be so many Doctor Who mods. Oh, kill me now.
There'll be people contacting you, Jan, and saying, can you do me some artwork for a tech?
Can you do me a Dalek leader here? Yeah.
Heaven forbid.
Goodness.
It's really cool to see when the community gets together and works on such a huge project, and we're getting closer and closer to Caveman to Cosmos or Rise and Fall.
More and more mods intertwine with each other together, and it's really nice to see that they all, or most of them, play into a bigger scheme of things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, the standard's going up all the time, and people now who do civilizations are now required to have the decisions, they're required to have the music, they're required to have all sorts of things that didn't require.
Yeah, good leaderheads, the music, the diplomacy text, compatibility with yet not another Earth's map pack. You've got the standard just keeps on going up, and when that standard goes up, the bar keeps on getting raised, and you're going to be seeing in the future some really, really cool civs, and you think that everything's been done, but then you realize, wow, when something's released, like, why didn't I think of that new to go higher?
It's something that nobody had thought of, and yeah, it's going to be the standard that that's included in all the civs going forward, and it's going to be, can't imagine the game without it at some point soon, you know?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah,
first to you, JFD, for setting the standard. I think sometimes people underestimate how important a color scheme can be in terms of a civ or a musical piece theme and stuff, because it can really give you the essence of a civ. And when the color scheme is just kind of bland and look like it has some damage, sometimes it kind of turns you off.
If you could have one wish or one desire for something to change with the code, what would it be? For me, just to give you an example, there's so many different elements to Civ 5, i.e. there's Brave New World, Gods and Kings, and all the different DLCs, that when I create a huge mod like Anno Domini, half the people want me to incorporate all the stuff from the DLCs, and half the people don't because they haven't got them. So I'd like for Axis to create something which recognises the setup of that individual PC. So it'd say, right, well, if you've got the Babylon DLC, then they can be in the game. But if you haven't, then it'll be okay. We'll just play without them.
Mm. I'd like the Firaxis gods to descend from their mighty computer thrones. And hopefully for Civ 6 and Beyond Earth, they're going to give us more modding capability. We've all figured out, we've all got it going for Civ 5 at the moment. Like Jan was saying, we're finally getting to the habits and the methods in order to figuring out how to do things. I'd like for that to happen straight from the get-go in future, because the modding community is just such a fun place to be. And when everybody's being competitive straight from the get-go, there's going to be a lot of creativity. Can't set up too many expectations, but that's my one wish, pretty broad.
My one wish is that Civ 6 comes out in 2016 and not next year.
We need more time. We don't want to be obsoleted so fast. You have to wonder, like, why are all these people from Civ 3 still sticking around? And now we're kind of beginning to understand why people from Civ 5 want to stick around even when Civ 6 is out. It's that nostalgia slash pride factor where, like, I don't become obsolete.
There's something to it.
The other thing that I've noticed really with potential of Civ 6 coming along, one thing that I never heard before with the grade from Civ 3, Civ 4 and so on, is that people are saying, well, I don't want to start from scratch again with just maybe Rome, Egypt and a few others, and have to wait another year for some new mechanics to come in and some new civs, and then wait yet another year for the rest of the game to be created. I've got a full game with Civ 5, and we've got a massive community that's giving some new mechanics as well and some new civs. Some people just don't want to start from scratch again with Civ 6.
Mm-hmm. You have to wonder, like, where the trends are going to go, because right now there was the whole microtransaction trend and the whole DLC trend, but that steady revolt, especially the whole Assassin's Creed fiascos and all those other The Sims DLCs, and people are really wondering, why are you splitting up my game and why are you cutting my game up to pieces and force-feeding me them individually? And you're not selling me a complete game. So you have to wonder if people are just going to rise up and say, going to vote with their wallets. You have to wonder how different Civ 6 is going to be from Civ 5, like step up from Civ 4 to Civ 5 is.
Yeah. I mean, whatever it is, I can't imagine not buying it.
Mm, exactly. Like, I'm entrenched in the series. I'm not going to buy Beyond Earth. I have that obligation to do so now.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I'm here already. Might as well.
Yeah, exactly. I agree. Even if it's to steal some graphics and nothing else. That's my idea.
Yeah, I'm also taking bets on how quickly you're going to get the civilizations from Beyond Earth putting back into Civ 5.
That'll be done in a couple of weeks either.
As you may or may not be aware, Modcast is the second oldest Civilization series podcast. Podcast is the oldest. At PAX 2010, Timothy Steiner-Davian acted as the Elder Show's representative and interviewed Civ developer Firaxis Games' Dennis Shirk about the then-upcoming Civilization V, then released that September. Intended to be included in a modcast at the time, but was cut. Here, for the first time, asking Shirk about Civ 5's modding capabilities, specifically the Software Development Kit, or SDK.
And what about an SDK? Civ 4, by far the most moddable version of Civ, with the SDK and XML and Python scripting. What can you tell us about the SDK that might be available for Civ 5 at this point?
Well, first off, Civ 5 is every bit as moddable as 4. The difference is that the tools that we're putting in eclipse anything we've had before. The standalone world builder is absolutely amazing. Sean Seckman, our lead guy just in charge of modding tools, and that's what he's focused on almost completely, is working on these tools, doing amazing things. Eric Jordan is the guy that's actually working on the world builder himself. itself. And they're making a tool that is so unbelievably easy. I mean, my 12-year-old can come in and create maps. The UI is incredibly easy to use. Publish a map easily. There's many other tools that we're going to be talking about, including what we're doing with the SDK, again, in the near future. But I think when people see what we're doing, it's going to be really, truly impressive. He's trying to make a tool for everything. For instance, the tool that he's made for localization, even, he's making something called LocBuddy, which is going to automatically localize all the text that the modder creates for a scenario. Now, I mean, you're going to get some situations of all your base are belong to us, but it's just a neat addition. It's just another example of trying to make it easy for modders to publish stuff. It's really cool. It's great to our system.
So in terms of the world builder we had in Civ 4 and the map editor we had in Civ 3, the world builder, where does that compare between the two?
The standalone world builder with this is, I think, much better in terms of ease of use than the previous ones. I know the world builder, for instance, in Civ 4, it was a very powerful tool, and you could do a lot with it. It wasn't always the easiest thing to use, especially for people that aren't familiar with scripting, they aren't familiar with the mechanics of the game. The point-and-click method that we have and the extremely easy UI that you're going to see in the new world builder, just, I don't know, it's going to make people forget about anything we've had before. It's just so easy to use.
Well, I'm really looking forward to that from the sounds of it, because I really like the map editor we had in Civ 3, but I had a hard time using the world builder in Civ 4, other than to help me if I was, you know, falling behind a little bit.
Yeah.
Modders be able to create their own map scripts as easily as they could in, like, in Civ 4?
Definitely. I mean, we've already got some from the fan community in our Frankenstein test group already working on that stuff, creating map scripts, doing that kind of thing. And the repository that we're going to have online for downloading everything in the game, we hope is even going to encourage more people to learn this, more people to create map scripts and mods and scenarios or anything else that they want to upload.
Calling today in North America, the number is 301-637-7659. That's 301-637-POLY. In Europe, 44121-288-7659. That's 44121-288-POLY.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
You can Skype us at the Polycast or email us at thepolycast@gmail.com. For more information on Modcast, our sibling shows Polycast, Revcast, Civcast and Turncast, or about Polycast in general, log on to the series' official website at thepolycast.net.
If you're lurking, people always need new ideas and we always need suggestions and stuff like that, because the modding community doesn't just run by itself. It's a community-oriented thing. So when people share feedback and people share ideas, the community flourishes. If you're sitting on the sidelines, I would recommend getting involved, because everybody can use some praise or some criticism. Otherwise, you don't grow up as a modder.
Good point. There's so many people. When you look at the forums on Civ Fanatics, it's like X amount of people are on, and most of them are lurkers, people that haven't even registered. And so I'd love those people to get involved.
What are you doing? What are you waiting for? Just say hello. We're lonely.
We're lonely in our superior numbers.
Jan's lonely in his basement because JFD keeps on like, where's my art?
And he won't let him out of the first floor.
That's called an attic.
It's not yet an attic.
It's a studio.
It's a mud hut.
Yeah, you could call it like that.
It's just a public bathroom in the middle of Poland. Go away, I'm working.
Right, so that seems to be it then.
Episode 50 of Modcast.
Yep.
Right, thanks.
All right, thank you.
Thanks everyone for listening.
Thank you and goodbye.
All right.
Bye-bye.
See you guys.
So we'll see you next time.
Yeah, look forward to it. Thank you.
Excellent. You're welcome. Thank you.
Bye.
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 Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.
Goodbye. Bye.
Bye.
See ya.
Bye. Goodbye. Good.
Let's see. Let's just see. Hold on. Okay, I'm back. My dog was barking.
I'm gonna be right back. I need to get my mic.
Okay.
Took me out and gave me breakfast. She said, you come from a land of blum, 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 blum. Women glow and then blunder. Is our Jan alive? Jan? Oh, I gotta stop saying Jan. Let me message him on Steam. Do you have him on Steam? Oh, your Steam doesn't work. Your Steam's screwed up for some reason.
Mine?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Your Steam never works. What's up with your Steam?
I've no idea.
It's got like a personal vendetta against you.
Maybe.
Hey guys, sorry I was then.
No
problem. How dare you? Nobody actually knows how to pronounce his name. I like to call him Pookie, but he doesn't really approve of that. Anyway,
probably dang it. Now I'm brain farting.
Cannot gain.
Represent. Sorry, go on.
I do see what you mean. There's a lot of synergy within the Civ itself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's synergized.
I think someone's going to replace the Slavic leader in Beyond Earth with Catherine pretty early.
We want to replace it with Space Casimir. It's just Casimir in a space outfit. I love that. Space Gandhi, Robo Gandhi. That's even a better idea. I love it when you're in the industrial era, you bought 3 factories and you got the ideology that gives you the 6 free foreign legions and everybody else is still in the Renaissance.
Yeah.
Shaka's tormenting you, you get your foreign legion troops and you just crush them under the might of your maintenance-free, hat-wearing, French moustache-laden army. It's fantastic.
Do you want to do that now?
Like, we want to play the Civ 5 right now, or...?
No, I mean, do you want to... Obviously, I take it Dan will be editing this bit quite heavily.
Oh, yeah.
Got about an hour's worth from me and Scott earlier.
Oh, God.
A few weeks ago. So there's an hour and a quarter of it here.
Going to be so much editing to do.
We'll give Dan as much material as possible, and he'll put it together, put in sound clips, and it'll look brilliant and awesome, and you'll be like, oh my gosh.
Editing out just bloopers and just,
Record dates May the 26th and July the 7th, 2014. Civilization 4 and 5 sound clips, copyright Take-Two Interactive. Copyright Civilized Communication at civcom.net.